Hello, you are listening to North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This is Janet Schanzenbach, and today we have two guests with us, Iris Green, Senior Attorney with Disability Rights, and Curtis Hill, Disaster Relief Advocate with Disability Rights North Carolina. Welcome to our program.
Well, thank you for inviting us, Janet.
I would like to ask you, what is Disability Rights North Carolina?
Disability Rights North Carolina, we are the Protection and Advocacy System, also known as the PNA for North Carolina. And we are charged by Congress to provide free advocacy and legal services statewide to people with disabilities. And by federal law, each state and U.S. territory has a PNA, and our mandate includes federal authority to have unfettered access to enter and to monitor facilities where people with disabilities actually receive their services. And we monitor to make sure that people are free from abuse, to make sure that they are not being discriminated against, and make sure that they are not being neglected. And the scope of our access authority also extends to monitor shelters when people evacuate because of a disaster.
Can you tell us, what does Disability Rights do?
Disability Rights North Carolina, we have a broad mission for all people with disabilities. Our mission is to advance and defend the legal rights of all people with disabilities in North Carolina. And we want to make sure that we achieve a just society for them, and want to make sure that, again, that they're not being discriminated against, make sure that they're not being abused and not neglected. We also work to create a society where people with disabilities are fully integrated into communities where they live. And this society, we believe, is a society where people with disabilities, they are empowered, they have equal opportunity, and they have freedom to make their own decisions about their own lives.
Wonderful. Can you tell us what the Disaster Relief Project is and its goals? We're all very interested in knowing about that, especially as hurricane season approaches.
The Disaster Relief Project, this is a new project with Disability Rights North Carolina. Now, we do work on other issues outside of monitoring and facilities. Those are broad issues, but the Disaster Relief Project is one of the newest initiatives that we've been working on. It was born out of us monitoring shelters during Hurricane Florence. And Hurricane Florence made landfall in North Carolina on September 14, 2018. And it took us about 2 days to actually get into the shelters because of the high waters and because it was not safe to be able to travel to get to the shelters. So on September 16th, we sent about 7 staff members to the shelters. After September 16th, they visited 26 shelters in 47 days. And we were able to actually speak with more than 300 people who had evacuated and were displaced and were actually living in the shelters at that time. We also spoke to over 150 shelter staff and other service providers. We witnessed some progress which was made during Hurricane Matthew, but we also saw that there are still many challenges that need to be addressed. And the conditions that our staff witnessed during our monitoring of the shelters during Hurricane Florence, they're outlined in a public report that we actually published in February of this year, and it's entitled The Storm After the Storm Report. And if you don't have access to the report, you can actually get the report by visiting our website at www.disabilityrightsnc.org, or you can contact Curtis and I, and we'll be able to get that report to you, and you can call us at 919-856-2195. Now, a few of the conditions that our staff witnessed included inaccessible shelters where people had to navigate steep stairs to reach their cots, to use the bathrooms, or to engage in any of the activities that were in the shelters that day. And we also witnessed that there was one of the medical shelters which was designated to serve people in need of high level of medical care. It was housed in a closed state psychiatric hospital that had air conditioning and plumbing issues. And at least one wing didn't have a functioning bathroom in this particular facility. And the building was also located in an area that was at risk of flooding. So these are issues that were not unique to North Carolina emergency sheltering, but these were issues that had been identified in previous reports in 2008 and 2014. And so as a result of us actually monitoring and issuing this report, we did receive funding from a grantor out of California called Operation USA. And then we also received additional funding from the Center for Disaster Philanthropy to continue the recovery work. And so we're still working with people with disabilities in the recovery phase to try to help them address any unmet needs and help them to return to their communities. And so the Disaster Relief Project, it can be summarized in three main objectives, Janet. First, the Disaster Relief Project seeks to provide civil legal aid for people with disabilities. We want to make sure that we remove all legal barriers and resource barriers to help them before, during, and after the disaster. And today, many lives remain disrupted and people are still struggling to recover. Second, the focus is to keep people with disabilities and their challenges at the forefront as North Carolina continues to prepare for future disasters during their planning sessions at the state and local levels. And third, we also want to ensure that any funding that comes into the state that is equitably distributed to those most vulnerable communities. And currently our project is located and is focused in eastern North Carolina.
Can you tell us what has been the approach of the state in disaster recovery and resilience?
Yes, I think the state is very concerned and really want to get things right and want to make sure that all North Carolinians are prepared in the case of future disasters. And even though we noted many challenges in our public report, we also want to note that there were important pieces that came together since our last hurricane, which was Hurricane Matthew in 2016. The first big important change that has happened is that the County Emergency Management, they have hired a disability integration specialist. This person is actually responsible for making sure that people with functional and access needs, that their needs are met during emergency. We are also happy to note that American Red Cross, they also dispatch regional disability integration specialists to its shelters whenever we had a disaster during Hurricane Florence. And what we found at Disability Rights North Carolina is that the disability integration specialist staff, they measurably improved the outcomes for people with disabilities. And this was because the disability integration specialists, they have specialized training, they have sensitivity, and they knew how to speak and respond to people. They knew how to access services that were needed during a time of crisis. And so we believe that this is a program that deserves expansion and greater investment. Another addition that has happened that we think is very important is that they've recreated the North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency. And this agency work alongside the North Carolina Emergency Management, and they actually administer the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development funding, also known as the Community Development Block Grants. And the acronym that's used the most is called the CBDGDR funding. Yes, that is it is a mouthful. And so excited that they actually created this agency. I think the previous agency that actually handled the CDBG funding dismantled. And so we're happy to see that this office has come back and now hoping that the be distributed in accordance with HUD policies and make sure that it reached the most vulnerable populations. The other important stride that has happened is that the state of North Carolina, Carolina Emergency Management, has created three work groups. First work group is called the Accessibility and Shelters Work Group, and this work group identifies accessible shelters. And there's another work group that's called the Functional Assistance Service Team, also known as FAST Teams. These are teams that actually go out and they assess shelters during a crisis, and they go into the shelters and make sure that people with disabilities, their needs are met and make sure that the shelters are accessible. And so what has happened as it actually created this team, the teams came from FEMA. And so now what has happened, because we created this work group, we have our own functional access team, our FAST teams that will go in and will monitor shelters in the future. Third work group that was created is called the Agency Operations Work Group. And they help agencies prepare for disasters. And so we believe that the creation of these work groups will help better prepare North Carolina in the future. Now, these are some of the notable improvements, and however, there's still much more work to be completed to ensure that all North Carolinians have an equal opportunity at surviving a disaster. We also are pushing for trauma-informed care to make sure that all shelter volunteers and shelter managers, they understand the way that you should approach and you should approach your people using the trauma-informed approach. And so we are pushing for those and additional initiatives. And we also want to make sure that state and federal officials take care of the shelter volunteers, making sure that there are new workers available to relieve those who are overwhelmed, exhausted, or suffering from compassion fatigue. And so we will continue to work with them and continue to try to make sure that the disaster, if we are faced with a future disaster, that it is better and that we continue to grow and learn from our mistakes and address the challenges.
Very good. Thank you. Can you give us now some practical advice? What do you do if you're an individual with a disability and have a service animal, emotional support animal, or a pet?
Yes, there's a lot of protection out there. 68% of U.S. households, or about 85 million families, own a pet, according to the 2017-2018 National Pet Owner Survey. And the good news is that there is lots of protection for our pets during emergency sheltering under the Pet Evacuation and Transportation Standards Act. And this is also known as the PETS Act. And the PETS Act was passed in 2006, shortly after Hurricane Katrina. And under the PETS Act, any shelter that received federal funding must provide plans to accommodate household pets and service animals before, during, and following a major disaster. And the PETS Act also allows FEMA to provide funding to states and localities for creation, operation, and the maintenance of pet-friendly emergency shelters. So along with other preparedness actions for companion and service animals, there are more protections for service animals. And FEMA is also permitted to reimburse state and local governments for rescuing, caring for, and sheltering animals in an emergency. And we also want to make sure that people understand that service animals are not pets. They are working and they are providing a service for people with disabilities. So under the North Carolina law and the Federal Americans with Disability Act, also known as the ADA, people with disabilities may bring their service animals to all places of public accommodation. And this includes shelters if they are open to the public. And these laws also require that those who operate transportation services, so if a person with a disability is needing help trying to evacuate and need to access public transportation to try to get to a shelter, their service animals are allowed. And so public accommodation in North Carolina must comply with both the state and federal law, and people with disabilities who have service animals are entitled to rely on whatever law that gives them the most protection.
Iris, can you tell us why civil legal aid is important during this time?
Yeah, Janet. Yes, civil legal aid is crucial, and many of the problems that people experience before, during, and after a disaster require civil legal aid to help them resolve those problems. People with disabilities, they experience all of the same problems, plus additional challenges that may be related to their disability. So it's important for people to have access to legal help. Access to legal help is vital as they try to prepare, try to put their lives back together, making sure that they understand what their rights are, and make sure that those rights are actually adhered to during the disaster. And like preventive health care, when civil legal aid is available, it can keep problems from escalating. So, again, it's crucial that people with disabilities, that they understand their rights and responsibilities, know when legal assistance may be needed, know where to go and find this legal assistance, and get the assistance that they need when it is necessary.
Can you tell us what is the direct issues North Carolina needs to address as we move forward in disaster preparedness?
Yes, one of the biggest issues that we have to address and have to come up with how we make more housing available. So the scarcity of affordable housing existed before and was worsened by Hurricane Matthew and Hurricane Florence. Recovery efforts to date have not addressed the loss or lack of housing in North Carolina. And we are concerned because the rising sea levels and climate change, we can almost know that we're going to have another disaster in the future. And so this is the time now during Blue Skies to plan and develop safe plans, try to make sure that we have affordable housing plans and make sure that the housing is accessible and make sure that the housing that we do build back can withstand natural disasters. And so we believe that the housing is the most important issue. We also want to make sure that when we build back, that we incorporate principles of equal access and universal design into all aspects of our emergency planning. And we have to engage experts when necessary to identify strategies and solutions for meeting specific functional needs in all circumstances. And then the other issue that we think is most important is that as a state of North Carolina, as all of the funding that is coming through and as all of the funding that it comes through the General Assembly, we must exercise prudent stewardship and equitable distribution of the CDBG-DR funding and ensure that this funding reach our vulnerable populations and communities that need it the most. HUD requires that Carolina spend at least 80% of the CDBG-DR funding in counties designated as the most impacted and distressed. And we want to make sure that those counties receive those funding that has been set aside for them.
How can people contact Disability Rights North Carolina if they need assistance?
Yes, and like I said, we know and we understand that even 10 months later that people are still recovering from Hurricane Florence. And so if a person with a disability or a family member are encountering barriers that are still not allowing them to return back to their homes or their communities and they're still struggling, they can give us a call. Disability Rights North Carolina, our physical office is in Raleigh, North Carolina. We are located at 3724 National Drive in Suite 100. They can also contact us on our website. We have an online intake, lots of information and resources on our website. And that website address, again, is www.disabilityrightsnc.org. We're also on social media. We have a Twitter account, and our Twitter handle is at disabilityrightsnc, and rights is RTS. We're also on Facebook, and you can reach us on Facebook at Disability Rights NC. And if you want to speak with us directly, Curtis is the disaster relief advocate. He's the one that's in the field and on the ground doing a lot of the advocacy. And Curtis can be reached at 984-297-1533. And I'm actually in Raleigh, and I can be reached at 919-856-2195.
Could you provide us with some practical advice for North Carolinians? How should people with disabilities prepare for a disaster, like a hurricane or a flood?
Yes, I would greatly. My name is Curtis Hilton. I'm the disaster relief person on the ground advocate. So one of the things, there's nothing really different for dealing with someone with a disability as opposed with anybody else. But we have to take, and one of the most important things that you do is you must have an action plan. And you need to develop your action plan to deal with a flood or hurricane before that happens. And so you want to make sure that you have your family and your friends and everybody that's going to be around you to know what your plan is. And you want to have that plan in mind, in a frame of mind, that you're able to operationalize it when it's time to come. And so you also want to also contact your local emergency management office, because that is a place where they're able to keep in contact with you to see exactly what your plan is and those kind of things. And this key that you understand is they will not operationalize your plan. You have to be the one to operationalize your plan. The same things that a person that doesn't have a disability has to do are the same things that you have to have in place. So, and as we're thinking about us living in North Carolina, one of the most important things that we make sure that we have is insurance. That's key. You need to have flood insurance. You need to have wind and hail insurance. Even though they do sell plans that do not have wind and hail, but the likelihood of your house burning, or, you know, when you live in eastern North Carolina, the more likely it will be that it would actually flood or have wind and hail damage. So that's why it's important that you understand that you need those things in place, because FEMA and these organizations are just trying to get you back whole, not getting you back whole again. They're just trying to get you able to make other arrangements at another time. So this is the goal of the situation. So what we're trying to do is to make sure that people with disabilities understand in a language that they're able to understand about what is needed, what they need to do on a daily basis, because we none of us know when a disaster is going to happen. That's why we have to be ready every day for a disaster to happen. So even so, sometimes you know, I think, well, what is my evacuation plan? How am I going to get to point A to point B? Who's going to take me? If they say a mandatory evacuation of my area, what friend or family member am I able to call that's going to make sure that I get where I need to be? And then also make sure that you have also your medicines that you need and any other assistive devices that you might need to make your stay away from home beneficial.
Could you tell us how the preparation and recovery process and experience is different for people with disabilities from those that are people without disabilities?
I would like to say that they're pretty much the same, but they just have a little more nuance. As we understand, you have a compounding of issues that are already there, because most people with disabilities don't have extra money, finances, and those kind of things. So what we have to think about is the long-term planning. See, a person with disability might can't afford to buy everything they need at one time, but they might can buy for their survival emergency kit, they can buy one item a month. So you have to think about it practically about what you can do instead of trying to be overwhelmed saying, I've got to get all of this at one time. You want to do it incrementally because that can fit within your budget. And so we realize that the stresses and things because of disability, you're needing to have the ability to navigate the complexity of the issue. Because sometimes, as I was telling before I started this job, I was being interviewed somewhere that I was talking about, you need to have a doctorate degree in order to understand the FEMA processes and all those kind of things. So if people don't have that skill set of understanding it, they're pretty much left behind. So it takes a little extra encouragement. It takes people walking with them because they're not really understanding or not being able to understand the terminology that FEMA's using and those kind of things. And a lot of times with these situations is with FEMA and these programs, especially with the insurance things, they do this thing about trying to prevent fraud. So you're going to get they will send you a letter of denial. And so telling somebody that you know they can see the flood in their house and those kind of things, don't get discouraged because they sent you a rejection letter. The process is for you to actually go and fill out the form for the appeal and make sure you have your documentations and all those types of things there. And you want to also want to have pre and post pictures of your facility. And you also want to have a picture of like on your when it comes across the TV and it says we're in a mandatory disaster, you want to date stamp that in a picture so you can have that for your records to know that I'm actually in one of those areas, because that would also help you as further along your process that you can mandate that you were actually in a disaster, and that will help your process going on. And we also want, before the storm, we want us to already be gathering our most important documents, because that's important. You need to have your Social Security card, all your medicines and all those types of things that you need. You need your identification copies, your passport, driver's license, Social Security card, birth certificates, green card, or other forms of identification. You need your medical, your copies. These could include allergies, immunizations, medical conditions, etc. You need a personal assessment. If you or anyone in your household has a disability, make a list of the personal needs and resources you or they would need in a disaster or evacuation. Then you need to have your insurance papers. You need to have a copy of the declaration letter of your insurance so you can understand what your insurance is paying for and what it won't pay for. And that's key in what you're dealing with. You need to also have copies of your health insurance too, car insurance, because that might be flooded or something. So you need to make sure that you're covered on that and realizing that your homeowner's insurance is not flood insurance. I'll repeat that. Homeowner's insurance is not flood insurance. And so that's a separate policy that an individual has to get to handle their situation. Then you also need to have copies of your bank information. That means your bank account numbers, your savings and your retirement accounts, and your account numbers. You want to have that somewhere that you're able to get easily accessible. And then you also want to have some extra money around. Because sometimes when disasters happen, the banks don't open because they can't get, the current is out and those kind of things. So you want to make sure you have at least some some cash available to you. Then you also want to have assisted animals or pet records, because if you're going into a shelter and you've got a service animal, they might need to see your those shot records and things like that to make sure that you can come. And then you want to have personal documents. You want to have copies of your family valuables, like marriage certificates, treasured photos, family history, other important family keepsakes. And you want to have a copy of those on a CD or a thumb drive. And then you also want to have a list of important people you need to contact in case of emergency. You want to have that easily available to you. Phone numbers for the city or county government emergency. So your 911 numbers and those kind of things with Department of DSS or Social Services and those kind of things. You want to have those numbers handy available, and you want to know who your caseworkers are. All that information is important as you're trying to go through this process.
That's great advice. Can you tell us what is the current way is that we have of communicating disasters, especially for people with disabilities?
The answer to that is no. It really means it's got to be, we've got to think as a strategically as a state government and everybody, as nonprofits and all those, about how are we going to be able to reach people where they are with the information so they can be empowered to make decisions. Because as we realize, the Category 5 storms that we run through, that's not adequate enough to really deal with the real issues that people are dealing on the ground. Because that is only talking about the wind damage that someone might face. It doesn't talk about the tributaries and all those kind of things and the environmental pieces and the flooding that happens all throughout. See, a lot of the problems is not just wind and hail problems. It's the water that comes from the strength of the storms. Because if you realize that Florence was a Category 1 storm when it hit, so the storm surge and all that kind of thing, that had a direct impact on people's lives. And that's something that you can't just figure out based upon whether you might say, well, I rolled out one hurricane, it was a Hurricane 1. So the next one is not going to be, but you know, they're saying it might be big, but it's not. But so it's, you can't never really say, well, I'm going to be able to ride this one out in the next one, because you never know what impact it's going to have on transportation and all those kind of things. One of the saddest things I was able to see, I actually live in Eastern North Carolina, and so I'm able to see, I was on the ground and saw when they had people helicoptered in and those kind of things from other parts in Pender County and those kind of things to my county. And so to see people lose everything they had, and they would, you know, and they had to be a Black Hawk helicopter. So it lets us know the urgency of making a plan and having a plan. Because you didn't flood in the last storm doesn't mean you won't flood in this one. And because of what they're saying doesn't mean it won't happen to you. Because it's other factors that can affect the ability to flood that is out of your control. But if we make a plan, we can be successful.
Great. What are some useful resources available to assist before, during, and after a disaster?
Some of the most useful things, as we think about it, we're interested in kind of, we have this thing about each county and each individual municipality is its own place. And so where your most resources are at your county level and in your city, in your town, they have resources to help you recover. And that's also with your emergency management office in each county. They have plans in place and how those things are going to work. So you want to make sure you're engaging with them, because they're the front lines of who you're going to see. It's going to take the state government a time to get there, or for even FEMA to get there. But it's your local folks. It's your folks at your churches and all those kind of things. You want to be in a network of people that understand what you're doing. And so you want to tie with your church or your synagogue or your mosque. Whatever you're doing, you want to tie into the community so you can make sure that you'll be successful at the local level. Then at the state level, we have emergency management, Office of Resiliency and Recovery. We have the Red Cross and all those type of organizations that they do everything. And at the federal level, you have FEMA. And then, see, people don't even realize that. You even have HUD that's actually doing, and the CBGR grants and those kind of pieces. Those are HUD programs that they have parts of those things. So you have an array of different resources that are coming in. But the most important resource is what happens at your local community. And you want to be engaged there so you can understand where you're moving in the future.
You have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. If you have any questions or comments, please call NCRS at 919-832-5138.